This week on the Pro Wrestling Podcast. Uncle Dax gets himself into some podcast trouble again, this time with Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson. The latest on Tony Khan's wild tweet storm over the weekend, Matt Riddle on why he thinks he was released from the WWE, and I follow up on my rant from last week about Chris Jericho and Nick Houseman with a quote on the record from Nick Houseman himself. I'm your host, Seth Grimes, and this is the Pro Wrestling Podcast. What the fuck is up, everybody? Welcome. Come on in to a brand new episode of the Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am your boy, Seth Grimes. As I sit here with my socks soaked to the bone, as I stepped in a puddle, coming down here, coming downstairs to the basement where everybody kicks off their shoes at the door, coming in. Perks of living in a winter wonderland is we got dumped on, and then we got dumped on some more. We went the whole, all the way up until now with no snow at all, none. And then, like, just dry as a bone, a little flake here and there, perhaps. And it was almost like God was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. They were supposed to get snow. That's right. And then he just, all of it, all at once, just. So that was fun. Had to dig myself out of being buried twice this weekend, and also working on a video, trying to finalize my review for the Iron Claw for you guys. It's taking longer than I thought. Got the non-spoiler version of it out in a couple shorts, but I decided to take it upon myself to add a bunch of extra video footage to it. To basically everything I've said, like all the other video essays do. And I'm telling you, it's hard work when you got other shit to do. But enough about that. We are here, episode 99, with our socks wet in the trenches. 99. One more episode to go right here and right now until the big episode 100, of which I will make a huge earth-shattering announcement. That will change the very face of the Pro Wrestling Podcast as we know it. Last time I made an announcement like this, it was an upgrade to video format. So now you get to see my handsome smiling face all the time. And aren't you glad I made that decision? Because I know you love looking at my ugly mug. Got a new hat, though. Check that shit out. That's the Batman logo. Black on black on black. New era. Just saying, not bragging or nothing. But we got some shit, a little bit of a shorter episode this week, to be honest with you. It wasn't that newsworthy. All the action was around Tony Khan's stupid-ass tweets. And yes, I will address them, but what could possibly be said that hasn't been said already? So I'm going to try to pull a couple clips from other people giving their two cents on that, which should be fun. And I'll kind of jump in and pile on, if you will. But we got some other stuff to get into. And enough about talking about it. But before we do, if I could bug you to please hit that subscribe button down below. Help a brother out. If you're not subscribed, why are you not subscribed? Subscribe to the shits. If you're listening on audio, I beg you, please hop on over to the YouTube channel and hit subscribe there. It's better there. I got other shit there like the aforementioned Iron Claw review. I'll probably post that to the podcast feed anyway, but you get what I'm saying. That's where the action's at. All right, let's dive on in. Speaking of action, to our first topic here this week. So last week, all the big hubbub in the wrestling community was the big Chris Jericho, Kylie Rae situation that may or may not have taken place, and all the wild accusations floating around out there. And it kind of took over Twitter and the wrestling universe overall. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was giving their two cents. And what that made me want to do as a podcast journalist, the podcast journalist that I am, the handsome podcast journalist that I am, by the way. Just throw that in there. I wanted to see where all this shit was coming from. So I dove into that a little bit on the clip from last week. And here's what I came up with in a nutshell. Let me play you a brief clip of this. And Jericho, in a drunken tweet, a drunken rant, had gone hard on Stephen Pinu, basically saying, ah, fuck you, you're a mark. I never signed any NDAs. And Stephen Pinu says, well, it's in your employee handbook, Chris. Unless you have a special one, we can figure it out. But it was what was found in the comments of this tweet that took this whole story from like a 4 on the who cares scale up to like an 8, right? And has caused Chris Jericho to now not even be on TV. So down here, I want to point you to this tweet from Nick Hausman. There he is. You see, handsome Nick Hausman. What about the NDAs you make other people sign, Chris? This is the tweet that has been making the rounds, that has been fueling this fire. So here's the deal. You don't quit the hottest fed going today, AEW, without reason. I have it from people in the know that Kylie was asked to go to Chris Jericho's room with the understanding that others would be there. When she got there, it was just him. He made a pass at her. No other details are given. And she freaked out. Let's bring it back here. So that checks out so far, right? Other than the fact that we have this tweet over here that's blurry as all fuck, we do know Kylie Rae was signed to AEW and then quickly left AEW. Who is behind the blur? I don't know, because I do believe that tweet was tweeted and deleted and now is just here back out on the internet and is being pushed around. And where exactly does any of this even come from? Well, everybody seems to be pulling off of the fact that Kylie Rae herself liked this fucking tweet here. So here's the deal tweet, right? So she put a little heart on it. So that is clearly an endorsement, which clearly proves beyond a shadow of any doubt that Chris Jericho is a sexual predator. At least that is what the internet wrestling community will have you think. So I had traced the source of all this business to this mysterious blurry tweet that's attributed to nobody, that's being spread around by marks on the internet. And the only thing that substantiates the tweet at all is a heart from Kylie Rae on the tweet itself, which isn't insignificant, but it's circumstantial. It doesn't prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that Chris Jericho actually did anything wrong. But one person that would have you think that he did was Nick Hausman. Nick Hausman was the journalist on top of this last week that was pushing it, both in the tweets, talking about how many people have you made sign non-disclosure agreements, Chris. And then he doubled down on his podcast where he said this.
And I just, you know, there are issues with Chris behind the scenes where I know of a lot of people who have been hurt by Chris and his actions. I do think that there's a lot of questionable stories about Chris that will find their way out over time. And when people are ready to tell those stories, that will cast him in a very different light. I mean, look, Harvey Weinstein won a lot of Oscars. Harvey Weinstein produced a lot of very popular films. Harvey Weinstein is now in jail. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Chris, but your narrative can very quickly turn if, you know, you're hiding a lot of skeletons in your closet.
To which I did something that I don't normally do or haven't done here. Now, I'm prone to rants from time to time on this show, but I don't really pick fights. And this particularly rubbed me the wrong way because as far as I could tell, there was really nothing to back any of this shit other than a heart from Kylie Rae. And here you have Nick Houseman saying some pretty significant allegations, defamatory allegations, in my opinion. You don't just reference Harvey Weinstein all fucking willy-nilly, right? So I was pretty upset about it. And I did. First, I want to apologize because my approach was a little bit aggressive. Frankly, quite aggressive. I had made several tweets to Nick Houseman. Let's take a look at these here. So here you see, along with the short that I posted about that clip last week, I challenge at Nick Houseman to provide proof of the flippant, defamatory comments about I Am Jericho, NDAs, Harvey Weinstein, and hurt multiple people. What proof do you have? Post it. Shut up and apologize or show proof. Like I said, came on a little stiff. I didn't hear anything about that, so I followed up. I challenged at Nick Houseman to show me proof of his, show his proof publicly of his wild Chris Jericho accusations, and he hasn't responded. The fact that I am a small content creator does not mean my voice is. So I will continue to push. And push I did. There was a video that I had put out, I believe, tweeted at him directly. And no response. So what I did was I took it upon myself to just message Nick Houseman. And so I sent a message to his contact on houseofwrestling.com. And Nick Houseman did respond. So first I'm going to go ahead and show you the message that I sent. And then his response verbatim, okay? I sent the following. Hello, my name is Seth. I run the Seth Grimes Media YouTube channel. Link below. I was covering the Chris Jericho, Kylie Rae story and found several of your tweets and videos alluding to some very serious allegations, including Chris making multiple people sign NDAs, Jericho hurting a number of people backstage that someday those stories will come out, and comparing Chris to Harvey Weinstein in no uncertain terms. What I was hoping to do is to get you to come out on record with any sort of proof of these allegations, a copy of an NDA, or a victim on the record. I wanted to clear this up because, one, if Chris is guilty of crimes, he must be outed. It must see the light of day for justice and safety. Or, number two, if there is no proof, then you are engaging in defamation based on hearsay and rumor. I am following up on this story this weekend, and I do believe a quote from you on the record addressing my two concerns would go a long way in either breaking the story or putting the rumors to rest. No quote or response will be noted publicly as well that you were reached out to for comment and ignored. Thank you for your time and understanding. So I realize I'm coming on very stiff with Nick, but I'm salty about this. Can't just, you know, this was a hot button issue last week based on a whole lot of nothing. So I'm trying to get to the bottom of things, right? And to my surprise, Nick Houseman responded, and here is what he said. Hello, Seth. I never directly compared Chris to Harvey Weinstein in no uncertain terms. Let's pause right there. Play that clip again.
Light. I mean, look, Harvey Weinstein won a lot of Oscars. Harvey Weinstein produced a lot of very popular films. Harvey Weinstein is now in jail. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Chris, but your narrative can very quickly turn if, you know, you're hiding a lot of skeletons in your closet.
I never directly compared Chris to Harvey Weinstein in no uncertain terms. I think that your summation of my statement like this, Jericho hurting a number of people backstage, that someday those stories will come out, is far more accurate. That's something, right? Okay, so, I mean, he knows some shit that he's not talking about, and that's what I'm trying to pull out of this fucker here. But he ain't budging. He goes on. My opinions of Chris are my opinions of Chris, and I stand by them. I think referencing the heart emoji from a former female AEW wrestler indicating her own thoughts on Chris is worthy of being included in your conversation. Thank you for reaching out. Best of luck with your coverage. And what I do want to do is I want to thank Nick for replying to that and giving me a statement on the record. And I do want to apologize for coming on like an asshole, to be honest with you, coming on aggressive, because this is a situation where Chris is damn near canceled over nothing. There's nothing here. And I stand by that. There's nothing here. All there was that one blurry tweet. Here you see it on the screen. And this one blurry tweet, the only thing that backs it is the Kylie Rae heart. And I did acknowledge that in the previous video, and I am acknowledging it here. So there you go, Nick. Pat on the back for you for, you know, all that hard journalism that you did to find that. Now, look, I'm still being rough on you. I think you know more than you're letting on. Yes, your opinions are your opinions of Chris, but you are sharing more than opinions, good sir. You are dangerously dipping your toe into defamation. But I think you have heard stories at the very least, if not have people who have talked to you off record. And I still think that you are doing the entire industry a disjustice by riding the fence here on this. If you have something worthy of, you know, something that's noteworthy, that's going to go somewhere in the way of proof towards incriminating Chris Jericho, then if you know something hard, say something, show something, prove something that can put Jericho in jail or whatever the fuck, like you so eloquently put, comparing him to Harvey Weinstein. And if you don't have anything, then you're defaming him by saying these types of things. This is not your opinion. By saying that, you know, oh, I think there's people that are backstage. I mean, maybe you said, I think, and that's your way. Look, I'm not here to point the finger or get you in any kind of, you know, it's not a defamation thing. It's, I think this is just, we need to be careful about the things that we say publicly with nothing to stand on for them. And I think him being the most, him, Nick, pronouns, pal, Nick Houseman being one of the most outspoken people about this, has really not come out with anything to back it up at all. Not a goddamn thing. Other than his opinions are his opinions and Kylie Rae heart emoji to fucking tweet. So there you go. I'm going to put that one to bed right there. Now, I did reach out to one other person I had fingered last week. Was the person that was spreading around. Anytime you saw a screenshot of this blurry tweet, it was taken from this ISO Wrestling, which I just kind of showed was just basically a fan page. And I did reach out to that person to see if there was any, you know, if they knew where this tweet came from, they knew of any other, you know, and anything else that they could point me in any other direction that's backing up their loud noises on their page about this issue as well. And again, nothing, no response there at all. So I will put this to bed there. I will lay this to rest. I will get off Nick Houseman's back. I do appreciate you, sir, for taking the time to respond to me on the record. And I do respect you for it. And, you know, I will respect your respect your opinion and your take and your words and leave it there. But I want everybody within the sound of my voice that's made it this far in the video to really understand that there's absolutely nothing here. If you want to base your entire opinion on Chris Jericho, a guy that's been in the public eye for 30 plus years, and a fucking heart emoji from a, quite frankly, a very flaky girl who not only was in and out of AEW very quick, but really didn't stick around much of anywhere. You know, very much like a female Leo Rush in that respect. Bounces around a lot. Can't hold down a job in the wrestling business. So, and that's not to discredit Kylie either. I'm saying her heart emojiing a blurry, nameless, faceless, vague tweet is just, it's not enough to ruin a man's entire career and cancel him and boo him and chant NDA and all that stuff. So it's fun to get involved. I think a lot of you are just bandwagon riders jumping on for your social justice points, as I said last week. Nick Houseman included. Look no further than his banner on his Twitter profile, still repping that pro-Ukraine. Right? Jumping, still riding that bandwagon. When's the last time anybody even talked about Ukraine, right? So notice he's not taking a side between Palestine or Israel, because that would be confrontational. There's no social justice brownie points in taking a side in that particular war. So we're going to the other war that has nothing to do with us to pick a side in that one to show how virtuous we are. But, you know, I'm still picking at Nick. I apologize, Nick. I do respect you, and I do appreciate your time. I just think, you know, we have a very different difference in opinion here, and I think it's questionable journalism. But who the fuck am I? I'm significantly smaller in this business than you are, so I am just a dude in my basement with a microphone. We'll leave it there, but it's something for you guys to think about. Within the sound of my voice, how we react to things, where's it coming from, who's perpetuating it, why are they perpetuating it, what do they have to back it up? And look, someday something might come out, as Nick Houseman said, for this. But until then, I think we need to step away from the social justice warrior, witch hunting and lynching of everybody in the court of public opinion, and really kind of step back and allow people to remain innocent till proven guilty, because it's just a tweet, folks. It's just a tweet. So till we have more than that, let's chill the fuck out, which we have, because we're worried about other tweets now, right? Tony Khan, thank God, and his barrage of ridiculous tweets has stolen the news cycle. But thank you to Nick Houseman for your participation in this story. Regardless of our difference of opinion or how much of a dick I've been to you, I respect you, sir. Peace, love, and pizza. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next. Well, everybody's favorite internet dweeb, Tony Khan, walked into a hornet's nest on Twitter and in the podcast world last week. As he made some absolutely ridiculous tweets. You've heard about him a million times, so we're not going to recover it here. But it's certainly worth jumping in and showing some of the hot takes here. Essentially, Tony Khan arguing over the validity of Hook's earned title shot in the world of fake phony kayfabe wrestling versus Jinder Mahal's value as earning a title shot in the fake phony world of professional wrestling. And everybody just bite his head off. USA Network got in on the action in this. Everybody got involved and piled on poor Tony Khan. Here's a look at some of the podcast clips that were prominent this week, taking a poke at good old Tony Khan.
Somebody around him needs to say, Tony, you need to take a vacation for a couple weeks. You need to goddamn start on decaf, or maybe get a full physical examination, sleep for 8 hours, do something, calm the fuck down, and reevaluate your priorities of what's going on. And don't rely on cage match instead of the cold, hard facts of the ratings of the programs, and don't rely on jousting with people on Twitter when you've got a serious issue of absolutely no healthy fucking main event level individual star on your roster that people aren't sick fucking death of. Start with that.
If Tony Khan were a television character that was saying some of this stuff, you could at least get away with the fact that it's a television character and not he's on Twitter and like this is actually bothering him. Because when the CEO of a company is tweeting about wins and losses, it's like, what are we doing here, pal? We're telling stories. That's all we're doing.
I guess, or what do you think is going through Tony Khan's mind? If I put this tweet out, it's going to get a lot of clicks. It's going to keep AEW's name out there. I'm advertising AEW, but he's talking like a straight up, just a fan who buys a ticket.
So I don't know where Tony's saying online outrage, where I was only seeing online praise. So he's made that up to himself.
The online rage he's talking about
is in his head.
Was Jinder Mahal himself? Where's the rage about that? Right? Is that what he's talking about?
Well, no, it's both things. So he's talking about there's no rage for Jinder Mahal and Seth, but there is made up online rage in his own mind with Hook versus Samoa Joe, which there isn't online rage. There's online praise for that, as far as I can tell.
Again, I'm at a loss for words here. Flabbergasted. I'm going to go back to my other word that I used. I don't get it. And I don't think the fans get it either. That's why that AEW is struggling right now.
I'm sure Tony thinks of it, hey, I'm getting attention. I'm promoting the show. People look at the engagement rates. Look how many people saw the tweet. Look how many people were talking about the tweet. In an analytical brain that he has, perhaps that's his goal. But the perception then surrounding him when he does stuff like that, it does not give off big boss energy, right? It gives off petty kid. I mean, Tony and I aren't too far apart in age, and I would never fix my fingers to type such a ridiculous thing, touting somebody's record in a company that I own, and I am the head of creative, and I created the record. That's my record. I created it.
Exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I mean. It makes no sense. It's the stupidest thing ever. You know what? I hate using the term mark. You know what I mean? But this seemed like someone who's definitely like you say, not thinking from a boss mentality, thinking about what's going on social media and what people are saying. One thing about this business, one thing about this life, especially the life that we're living in, this time that we're living in right now, no matter who you are, I don't care if you're Tony Khan, a billionaire, or the guy working at McDonald's, if you got a Twitter account, you're going to get some hate from somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And if that's what you're living by, if that's what you're running your company by, you got a serious, serious problem.
Tell me your opinion on that.
When is the veil going to lift? Like, how much longer do these stan fans for that company going to, how much more can they tolerate before they have to say, this guy is going to ruin our attempt to have a number two promotion because of his inability to grasp simple concepts? Like,
now you go and bring Jinder into the equation? Now you're acting like a mark who is bothered by what he is reading on social media. You need to be above that. You need to be more professional than that. You need to lead by example. You don't need to open up your entire company to a whirlwind of tweets about this. Did I see some AEW diehards last night on social media going, go Tony, go. You're our God. Yes, Tony, we love you. Yes, there was a spattering of it. For the most part, all he did was put AEW and himself in a negative spotlight last night by the tweets.
What about having...
Could you imagine the cops breaking into Tony's place as he's tweeting, guns drawn, sir, put the phone down.
I think, and this is completely a public service announcement, I think we might be at that point where somebody needs to go in there and be like,
this is where you come in, Tommy.
So I was editing up some videos, and I've been using this graphic of Tony Khan in a lot of things lately. Let me put that right here. And my girlfriend was asking why I keep doing that. Why do I keep making that guy look like that? Who is that guy? And so I had to, how do you explain in so many words that somebody who doesn't watch or know anything about wrestling, who Tony Khan is and why I would draw his eyes to look like that? Look, man, this guy needs to put his Twitter down. It's time. And it's not even a pile-on thing. It's starting to become a problem with him as a owner, as a businessman, as the forward-facing head of AEW. Here's the thing. He's friends with Dana White, and he's has said in the past that he considers Dana White an inspiration to him, a mentor, as you will. And that's what I think he's doing here. I think the old school internet chat room fucking boards on the dark web, where all the deepest, darkest nerds go to like jerk off over pictures of wrestling and shit, that Tony Khan was always that guy as a kid, right? He was always in the message boards. And that guy now owns a giant company, and he has a giant platform, and he considers himself more Dana White, but he's coming off like his old mark-ass internet nerd. And that's what he's doing. He thinks by being outspoken and being, you know, confrontational and being not afraid to call shit out and stuff like that, he's sounding like a mark is what he's doing. Because first of all, he's calling out kayfabe. This is not even real stuff. Who cares about how many people just want to watch Hook wrestle Samoa Joe. Nobody gives a shit how many matches Hook won. Nobody cares. Nobody's even talking about it. And then in Jinder, you know, nobody cares about that either. Nobody's complaining. Who cares? And if they are complaining, fuck them. Jinder's cool. Fine. I mean, it's a fine little... It's fine. Give Seth a match. It's a good little story for Monday Night Raw. Not everything needs to be CM Punk versus Seth Rollins in the main event of Monday Night Raw every single week. Sometimes you got to wait until you get there. Let's give Seth Rollins a win over a former champion who happened to pick up a little bit of heat last week in his angle with The Rock. So why not use that momentum to give Seth Rollins more steam and momentum? You see what I'm saying? It's good booking, but it's also kayfabe. It's not even real. And why are you talking about the other company when you run this company? It has nothing to do with either one. You're not Dana White. You're not defending Hook. You don't sound smart. You're not dunking on anybody. You sound like a dweeb. You sound like a nerd. You sound like a mark. And look, I want AEW to win. All right? I'm not trying to pile on Tony Khan either. I wish if he was in the sound of my voice, and maybe I'll clip this out and put it as a short, and it'll get a couple thousand views. Maybe he'll see it and hear about it and shut the fuck up. Because it's getting to be too much, man. You're ruining. Now you are a negative to your own company. Somebody like a Chris Jericho or somebody with enough credibility that he's going to listen to, that's close to him in his inner circle, needs to pull him aside and say, bro, you need to take a time out for a little bit. Step away completely. You know, I did a video on how to fix AEW a month or two ago. And maybe I'll link that here at the end cap or whatever. And I talked about, you know, Tony needs to kind of step away from the public spotlight for a little bit and have a lot of smart people around him to help, you know, get the TV back up to a watchable product. I think Tony, he just needs to step away. He needs to make people forget about him. Take a couple years off. And when he comes back, he can be in more of a professional manner, media scrums and press conferences. He needs to stay the fuck off Twitter for the absolute certain, at a minimum. Delete the fucking Twitter app. It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter. You don't need to look fucking trending or who's... Hire a social media team to figure out who on AEW is trending, what in wrestling is trending, what you need to be concerned about and what you don't need to be concerned about. Vince McMahon isn't out there on Twitter commenting on every fucking stupid little thing. He never did. He never gave a shit. Vince was oblivious to the entire wrestling business. I'm not saying to that extent you need to be. Triple H. What's Triple H? Who does he out there? Who's he out there bashing constantly? What storylines is he jumping in to defend and win loss records and comparing to other companies? And he doesn't. Stop that. Stop it. You're being a douchebag. You sound dumb. You're not dunking on anybody. You're not. It's bad. And here I am. Look, I'm just roasting them. Piling on, I catch myself saying it. I'm just saying, shut up, you're stupid. It's getting to that point, though, is it not? I mean, that's why we're all saying it. Like, I love a good little Twitter beef and exchange, just like everybody else. You know, this kind of stuff's fun. It's amusing. It gives us something to talk about in the wrestling community. But Tony's getting to the point where he's embarrassing himself. He's not just, it's not, oh, you're getting involved in these exchanges. You sound not intelligent. I don't know how else to say it without repeating, you're a stupid mark over and over and over. And look, I'm a mark. I might even be a stupid, I don't think I'm a stupid mark, but I'm a mark. I mean, it's not inherently a derogatory term. But I think when you're the head of a wrestling company, the last thing you want to have everybody in the wrestling business be calling you is a stupid mark. That's bad. That makes people not respect your company. That makes wrestlers not respect you. People see you as a fucking an open checkbook and not a boss, not a leader. People aren't excited to jump on your team. People aren't excited to represent your team. It's embarrassing to the whole company. Hook's not going to want to go out there and get involved in that mess. You think Hook's going to jump to his boss's aid and be like, yo, fuck you, Jinder? No, he's probably hiding under a fucking rock eating a bag of potato chips. Like, why are you talking about me, bro? Shut up. Shut up. I don't know. It's just not a good look. That's what it's come down to. And I can't believe that he's not self-aware of this or nobody's told him this. How is he not self-aware? He reads every goddamn thing on the internet. He's offended by every little negative tweet that somebody says. He finds it and it pisses him off and he responds to it and, grrr, and he drinks another cup of coffee and whatever and he gets all angered about it and he replies. Stop doing that. First of all, it's the internet. Who cares? People say stupid shit all the time. I get stupid shit in my comments and sometimes it's fun to play back. But, like, you can't let it ruin your day. And sometimes it does. Look, we're all human. People say mean, hurtful shit on the internet. I get that, too. And this is his company. This is his baby. This is his pride. This is his money, his ego. I just can't believe he's not self-aware enough to understand how bad all of this makes him look and makes the company look. And I don't think he is. I think he feels like he's winning. So I don't know if he's in like an echo chamber bubble. He's got yes men around him that go, oh, you really got him good, boss. Good job. Good tweet. I don't know if he's filtering out like, clearly he reads all the bad tweets. So obviously he's got to read the ones that say, shut the fuck up. You're embarrassing yourself. Does he not hear every single one of those people I just played? Bully Ray, Eric Bischoff, Booker T. Shut up. They're all saying it. Chris needs to pull him aside. Brian Danielson needs to pull him aside. Will Washington, the Fightful YouTube podcast guy, pull him aside and say, boss, shh. Take his phone, time out. Delete his app. Somebody secretly, his secretary, accidentally delete the Twitter app off of his phone. Oops. Change the password. Lock him out of it. Do that. Somebody, is there hackers? Is there a hacker within the sound of my voice that can hack into Tony Khan's account? Is this illegal for me to call for the for hacking? Hypothetically, if somebody were to hack into Tony Khan's account and, like, just change his password, just lock the motherfucker out of it, delete it, meh, I mean, oops, the world would be a better place for it in that hypothetical world that I have nothing to say or do about. I live in the real world where Tony Khan has a Twitter account and he's making an ass of himself. That's just my opinion and everybody else's opinion. I'd love to hear the counter argument. People that are like, no, Tony's doing great. He needs more of this. I love this shit. A little bit of confrontation ain't bad. People that are like, no, I just like to, it's fun to watch, you know, these people interact and to like beef and argue and stuff. Yeah, that's fun. But there becomes a point where, you know, you're embarrassing yourself. somebody down in my comments, they say something stupid. Sometimes I'll reply, sometimes I won't. And if I reply, I'm not going to get into a big, long, bitch session about it. Because at some point, that becomes embarrassing, right? Like, why are you just nitpicking with some fucking rando on the internet? It's not important. It's not. And if it's not important for me, a YouTuber, how is it not important for... How is it so important for a billionaire that runs a huge company like AEW, and out on the side, he's got his fucking Fulham football, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and his little numbers counting bean counter company that he has, and everything else that he does. I think he's got a fucking strip club, got a couple hookers out on the street, running arms, all his little side hustles that he does. Hypothetical world. Where does he find the time to worry about some fucking dipshit's tweet about fucking Hook's win-loss record? Why? Why? Don't you have, t-shirt logos to approve or, booking meetings to, make your storylines better or numbers to count? I don't know, man. I'll leave it there because all I'm doing, I can hear myself just piling on, burying the guy, just insulting him. But that's where we're at. There's no other conversation to be had. Shut the fuck up. There's no other take on this, folks. That's why everybody's doing it. That's why it's the pile on. There's no defense of Tony. No, not in this case. Not in this case. I'll leave it there. Let me know your thoughts down in those comments below. Let's keep the conversation going. Do you think Tony Khan is embarrassing? Does he need to step away from the public spotlight? Are you one of the people that do agree with Tony Khan? You think, shit, I like this. This is my guy, Tony Khan, out there fighting the good fight. I'd love to hear from you. I'm not going to bite your head off. I want to hear your take. I want to hear your point of view and why you think that, feel that way. And we all got our voices. This is just mine. Peace, love, and pizza. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next. We had a good old-fashioned tornado tag team match in the podcast world this week as FTR, Dax, and Cash got into it with Eric Bischoff and his tag team partner, Conrad Thompson, over on the 83 Weeks team. Both sides got into a little bit of a war over the podcast this week in a battle of how low can we go against each other. First, starting with an interview that FTR did. Check out this clip.
I don't think Tony Khan gets the credit that he deserves because he afforded a lot of people a lot of jobs and a lot of income. I mean, even if you look outside of AEW, you got all these old-time miserable podcasters like Eric Bischoff and, some of the others who make a living just by going on their podcasts and burying Tony in AEW when they know that AEW is a place where business is thriving, where AEW is a place that is helping change professional wrestling for the positive. So not only did Tony give us and everybody, hundreds of other people a living, he's afforded a living to some people who otherwise would be sitting miserable, bankrupt in their house.
I think he's really mad that Tony wouldn't give him a job the few times he was there to collect the paycheck.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
Comes bankruptcy number four.
There's a couple of podcasters out there that bury AEW that would love a job with Tony. There's one or two that wouldn't, but I know there's quite a few that glowingly talked about AEW initially, and when Tony didn't give them a job, now all of a sudden they're talking crap about it. That don't make sense to me.
That was courtesy of an interview by a man named Jeff Snyder, who I'm not entirely sure of his affiliation. His YouTube channel is rather small. Mine's nothing to shake a stick at, but this makes me wonder, do I need to start getting in the interview game? I'll interview Dax Harwood. We'll have a conversation with Uncle Dax. That'll be fun. But Dax and Cash did not hold back about their feelings about Eric Bischoff in particular. And of all the people that talk shit about AEW on the internet and in the podcast world, Jim Cornette specifically, even more than Bischoff. Bischoff's right up there, though. He's definitely one of the top AEW bashers. You know, he jumped right in there and got in the line of fire and took his shot at Bischoff. And of course, we all know Eric Bischoff is not one to bite his tongue. He's always happy to clap back and have a response. But what surprised me here in this next clip is that Conrad Thompson actually took personal offense to those comments, specifically in the bankruptcy comments. Check out this clip.
That just feels mean-spirited. It feels like a personal shot. I did not like that comment at all.
Well, I get it, because what else is Dax going to do if he doesn't have a gig in AEW? Now, as far as me being old and bitter and relying upon my commentary here on 83 Weeks to stay out of bankruptcy, and presumably that's the reason why, you know, Dax is so offended by something that I said or responded to Tony Khan on social media. But a little over a year ago, Dax is putting it over. He loved it. So Dax posts on January 15th of the last year, less than a year ago, very short notice, but we're going to record FTR with Dax Harwood in about an hour starting now. We're going to do a non-wrestling question of the week. And I responded in support because I'm that way. And Dax responded less than a year ago. Thank you, Eric. Big fan of 83 Weeks. Weekly download on my phone. But now all of a sudden, when I'm doing the same thing that I've been doing for the last 2 years, he's so offended by it that he talks about me going into bankruptcy if it were not for the silliness that's going on in TNA, or excuse me, in AEW, and my ability to have fun with it on social media. I ended up filing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy back in 2017. I've talked on this show at length about the reasons that led up to it that I talked about in the book. So it's not a shot at me.
It is a shot.
Like I said, it's in the book, right?
You weren't hiding it, but I mean, he made it personal in my view when he said that. And I thought, man, I got to throw the flag on that. And to be clear, this podcast was hugely successful financially before AEW was even a thing. Did you listen to Dax's podcast?
I listened to clips of it. I didn't sit down and listen to a whole show.
He's not doing that podcast anymore.
Well, we wanted to go into that. Why is that? I was going to call Matt Coon and get his side of the story, but I just wasn't in the mood to chat yesterday. So,
well, there's the version that, I mean, they made a statement there. You see the report from Fightful where he says there was no pressure from AEW or Tony Khan to shut down the podcast.
Not what, okay. I heard.
All righty.
And not what I heard. And I want Cash to know, I didn't have a gun to my head. Oh, sorry.
Oh, come on now.
No, there was no gun to my head, Cash. Pun intended. But again, Cash is in kind of the same. Maybe he's in a worse situation than Dax, because literally he's facing felony weapons charges and assault.
Oh, gosh. Come on.
Well, is he or isn't he? We're just doing facts here. There's no innuendo. There's no rumor going on here. These are just facts.
Who wins with this conversation? I mean, I know he's referencing.
Who wins with any of this conversation? But it's about the context.
This one jumped out to me. Now, the Eric Bischoff gets into these kind of messes all the time. So you really got to pick and choose, especially because Bischoff will talk for a half hour and say 10 minutes worth of shit. You know what I mean? So it's very difficult. You know, you got to pick and choose what battles you want to jump into with Eric Bischoff on this show, covering clips from him and such. But it's rare that Conrad ever has a bias opinion in something like this, or really kind of jumps in and says, you know, that one actually offended me. Yeah, Conrad's a good old boy. He tries to get along with everybody, and it made me look at it like, yeah, that was a little bit too far to kind of, especially Cash, you know. Dax kind of threw it out there as a light little jab, but Cash really kind of said it very mean, as Conrad had pointed out there. And then Bischoff, in true Bischoff form, comes back with the, look, I didn't have a to my head. Mic drop. It's funny, but it's low. It's a low blow. Both of them are low blows. Eric Bischoff had a real life bankruptcy. He's written about it. He's talked about it. He doesn't hide it. He's open about it, but I'm sure it doesn't make him feel good inside. It's a cheap shot. It's like somebody going through a public divorce or something, being like, oh, you can't hold your marriage together. Wow, dude. Like, A bankruptcy is like, I mean, that's a hard thing, right? Like, Bischoff's probably sensitive about it. But like I said, he doesn't hide it. He's open about it. He addresses it. But it is a shitty place to go. Take a shot at your show. Take a shot at the shit that he did in WCW. Take a shot at, oh, he's washed up now. Blah, 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 blah. Even the, oh, he's just mad he doesn't have a job in AEW. You know, everybody busts that one out. All of that should be fair game, but to go into his personal life and be like, oh, you know, your kid's penis is small and you're fucking, you know, your high school girlfriend dumped you for the football player. And it's like, bro, stop, relax. A bankruptcy is a low blow. Dax has always gotten himself into trouble. That was one other thing that came out here in these clips. I think it made the cut there. Where Eric and Conrad kind of hinting towards rumor and innuendo, insinuating that Dax's podcast had to end because Tony Khan didn't want it on anymore. Tony Khan told them to shut the fuck up. So that's news to me. I don't believe I've heard that, or at least haven't heard it confirmed in any serious way from any serious people. But that's, oof. You know what I mean? This got a little bit heated here. A lot of shots getting flung back and forth. FTR, they're never shy to speak their mind and to get in the mix. But it does get them in trouble from time to time. And honestly, I got to give it to Bischoff and Conrad on this one. And here's why. I love FTR. FTR is my favorite tag team. They're the greatest tag team in the whole wide world. They'll out-wrestle the Usos. They'll out-wrestle fucking DIY like they did in the past. They're the best. But they also got big mouths from time to time. And that's fine. But it does get them in trouble. And I think the bankruptcy was a step too far. And especially the mean tone. It wasn't just like, it was mean. It was a stick and a twist. You know what I'm saying? It was really meant to kick him in the balls while he's down. And I thought that is a step too far. So thus, you know, Eric Bischoff, certainly not one to take the high road. And Conrad tried to. Conrad was very, look, man, that was inappropriate, and blah, blah, blah. I really like FTR. And Bischoff played that game for a little bit, and then he busted out the thing to the head of my jig. Not going to say it because of YouTube. I don't know what the hell's going on in those algorithms nowadays. But we monetize now, so we got to watch our P's and Q's. But the thing with Cash and the getting in trouble and stuff, Bischoff, man, what a dunk. Fucking mic drop, you know what I'm saying? It was low. It was very low. And even Conrad was like, oh, come on. Bischoff will go lower. He's not scared to. You want to play that game? Let's go. Bischoff astutely pointed out he doesn't really ever start these beefs, but he's not afraid to partake in them. I don't know, man. I'm always caught in the mix between this is fun to talk about, especially on my show. And these guys need to chill the fuck out and lighten up and stop taking everything so seriously. I think Dax takes things way too seriously. I think that's been said here on this show before. Because I used to love his show and I used to cover it a lot. And it was because he always had a big mouth and he always said shit. And there was always news being broke. I covered his at least every other week, if not every week. There was something coming out of that show. And that's why we don't have a Dax Harwood show anymore. But he's not afraid to get in the mix either. But sometimes the drama's a bit much. He takes things a little bit too seriously. And I think everybody takes things way too seriously out in internet land right now. And there's no need to take those low blows. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you want to come at somebody for what they're doing, like me, you know, you want to jump in the comments and make fun of my show. You know, my, oh, your background's stupid. Your voice sucks. You're fucking, you're a shitty, all your news, your talking points, whatever the fuck. You know what I'm saying? Bash me and what I'm doing all I want. You know, but if you're like, and your baby mama's whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? It's like, whoa. It's funny. Quick sidebar here. I've been falling into a huge rabbit hole of Tupac and Biggie lately and kind of just catching up on all of the latest on that since the Keefe D arrest and all of that. And one of the things that I learned was that Tupac and Suge made it, that was like their fun little thing that they would do, is they would go and like fuck the baby mamas and stuff. Like, I knew Tupac allegedly fucked Biggie's wife, you know, Faith Evans, at the time they were married. But that was actually Tupac's idea, and he told Suge went and fucked P. Diddy's baby mama and like took pictures like with his kids and shit. That's cold. That's fucking cold. That's so fucking brutal. I think 50 Cent did that too. He took somebody's wife and kids shopping. I think it was 50 Cent that did that. Man, that kind of shit's so ruthless. It's funny. I'm laughing. But it's a step too far, you know. Take your shots at the rapper and his flows and his lyrics, and he's a bitch, and you never really held a peace, and all that, your fake studio, all that stuff. Well, you get into the baby mamas and the kids and stuff. It's like, whoa. And I think bankruptcy, you know, a personal bankruptcy where somebody's about to lose their house, to bring that in and go, LOL, haha, you almost fucking bankrupt, you fucker. You're such a loser. You were almost bankrupt. That's, I don't know. It's a step too far, but what the fuck do I know? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments below. I thought this was especially unique because Conrad got offended by it. Let me know everything. Do you think, are you team FTR in this tag team tornado match? Or are you team Conrad and Eric Bischoff? You think they're both dumbasses? You think they both have good points? Let me know all of it down in the comments below. And, yeah, that's it. Fuck off.
I hate Juggalos. I fucking hate them. I say all this with a grain of salt because for a good part of my own life, I proudly identified as a Juggalo. You should come to the gathering with me. Nah, man. I'm not into all that whoop-whoop shit anymore. I'll pay for your ticket. I got fired today.
Get the fuck out!
Still got room for me?
Spike, slow the fuck down! Cops!
Fuck your sleep! Fuck your sleep! Fuck your sleep!
The savages started closing in with their tiki torches and war paint.
Shit! Run! You guys got a dead body here already?
Even the aliens were throwing shade. It was pure panic and intense horror. There was a guy I saw got chopped in half. I had nothing left to go back to.
You alive?
Yep. The Gathering. A bold journey into the belly of the Juggalo underworld.
CM Punk is still making his rounds on the Kiss WWE's Ass Tour, where he's going around and saying all of the nice things that get you in the feelies about WWE that he's been saying the exact opposite of for the last 10 years. But we forgive him for it because CM Punk is back on our TV. And goddamn it, that's all we really want. And we want it to be entertaining. And CM Punk obviously has not let anybody down yet, as he is the number one probably prediction to win the Royal Rumble at this point, and probably the fan favorite to win the Rumble at this point, even over Cody Rhodes finishing the story, which may be a close number two or a number one. CM Punk sat down with the NHL's Jackie Redmond show. Of course, nothing that I follow. I'm not a sports ball guy or a sports puck guy, for that matter. Though I will say this, if I was going to be a sports ball guy, it would probably be hockey. I actually went to a local hockey game, and it's just pretty dope to see, like, in person and stuff. It's a whole nother ball game, so I definitely get the hype around it, but it's not for me. But I digress. CM Punk was on the Jackie Redmond show for the NFL, talking all about the NFL and that sort of thing. Of course, his beloved Blackhawks and all that other sports ball shit that nobody cares about. And if you do, good for you. The link's in the description below. You can listen to the whole thing. But what we care about is the wrestling. And Jackie Redmond would be remiss if she didn't talk about CM Punk's big return to the WWE after all these years, and asked him if he was nervous about going out in front of that crowd for the first time. And here's what Punk had to say. Check out this clip.
Before you got to address the crowd, you hadn't spoken to the WWE universe yet. I saw you that day. You chirped me about being a Leafs fan. But before you went out, you know, you were all business. Was there any part of CM Punk before going out there on Monday Night Raw that was nervous?
100% of CM Punk was nervous. You know, returning to wrestling is one thing. Returning to WWE is like a completely different animal, you know, and I didn't know how things would go. And it's not like I was off TV for a super long time. But you still, as a performer, you're still like, are they going to remember me? Are they, you know, and I was legit like in an arena that had not been kind to me throughout my career. First UFC fight was in that building.
I didn't even realize
that. Yeah, like, wow. you know, so I ran out of things, like bad things. Like a lot of bad things have happened to me in this building. You know what I mean? Got beat up here, you know? But I think it was also like hugely cathartic, because I'm very much a guy who, if you ask me if I'm ready, I'm going to tell you no, because part of the juice is being in front of the live crowd. Mm-hmm. I'm the old guy on the ice now, where like I can stretch and I can warm up, and I'm not going to be ready until I'm on the ice, the whistle blows and the puck drops. Now I'm ready. So yeah. I need to be in front of the crowd, and I need to see the red light on the camera. And then it's like, okay, now it's go time.
And this is why I say he's on the WWE Kiss My Ass tour again. Stuff like, you know, returning to wrestling is one thing, but returning to WWE is a whole nother animal. And blah, 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 blah. I mean, he's playing it pretty PG, which was also one of my predictions for the year 2024. I did a video for that, and one of my predictions was CM Punk is going to be the perfect model fucking employee. And so far, so good in that. CM Punk, but you know what? There's a lot of truth to it, too. It's not just bullshit. WWE is a completely different animal. The way that they do their media, the way that they're run backstage, the organization. AEW's run like a giant indie fed, right? It's all fucking run by the inmates. WWE is very much, okay, Mr. Punk, we got you over here for hair and makeup. Now we're going to get you over here. We're going to take some photos for you. Then we're going to move you over here, and we got this thing that we're shooting for this backstage DVD gimmick. And then this chick's here to interview you. That guy's here to interview you. Then we got this phone thing. Then we're going to do entrance checks, and it's just, it's a machine. It's a big goddamn conglomerate machine. And now he doesn't have to deal with the ridiculous tyrant of Vince McMahon, who just runs everything on a goddamn whim, and he was a creepy fucking mustache. And then we got, you know what I mean? Like the whole Kevin Dunn's gone now, so we don't have to worry about him complaining in the production truck about Punk being skinny fat or greasy or anything like that. It's a whole new world now. And I think Punk is kind of seeing, you know, not only, I mean, the machine's also grown. WWE is a different company that he left. I mean, they were a machine at the time. Now they're really a machine, especially with the Endeavor, the TKO gimmick, all that. Vince being gone. I think it is very eye-opening to Punk. It's a whole different ball game. And I think he's more at peace because of that. Not only is he at peace because he's got this behavioral clause thing that was rumored to be in his contract of him not fucking up again, but also I think when he gets there, he just goes, ah, oh, okay, I'm in a proper fucking wrestling company again now. I mean, he loves, any wrestler loves, I mean, the indie's fun too, right? A lot of these marks on the internet will sit and they'll joke about, oh, it's the indie fucking whatever. They don't even know. You've never been to an indie show. You've never been, I've been backstage of several indie shows for several different indie promotions, helped run several of those indie promotions and shows. I know a thing or two about it. Not on a big level, but I've done it multiple times. Indie shows are fun as fuck, and there's a lot going on there too. There's photo shoots going on there. There's meetings that need to take place. There's all kinds of shit going on at an indie show too. But it is a shit show. It's an indie. It is not a big corporate conglomerate like WWE is in the way that they run shit. It's just a whole different animal. And I think Punk seems to be more at peace in that system because now he's not being leaned on to be a de facto leader of anything. He's not being leaned on for to have to run everything, to be the creative force. I still think, you know, that they say that Punk was released from both of his contracts. He had a wrestling contract. His other, I'm telling you now, it goes back to his we're trying to run a business here comments and just how passionate he was about everything. Punk was a de facto EVP. He was an EVP, not in title, not in publicity, but I believe, you know, he had the corporate, you know, all the corporate perks that you get with being an EVP and having a contract with the company as opposed to like a 1099 wrestler. And I think he was in charge of a lot of the backstage shit. Now he doesn't have to. Now he just has to show up and he has to be the best CM Punk he can be. He can just show up and there's going to be people that are going to say, Mr. Punk, right this way, you have to be over here. And he's fine with that. He seems cool with that. And so he's got a great storyline he can sink his teeth into right now that's blending between reality and storyline, both with Rollins and Drew McIntyre. I mean, he really came back at the best time. I really think if Punk's going to have a good final run in WWE and really have an opportunity to go out on his terms and really kind of make peace with the wrestling world, it's going to be in WWE under this regime. The shit show over at AEW's would have just continued to get worse. There would have been, butting of more heads, even if he stuck it out longer than that. It just wouldn't have lasted. Now he doesn't have to deal with all that shit. You know, yes, he's going to butt heads with creative probably at some point, including Triple H. But I think it's not going to be to the extent because he's not dealing with amateurs and idiots and he's not dealing with hidden agendas or at least not as much, and he's not being leaned on to be as responsible for things. So all around, I do think he landed in a good spot. I think this is good for Punk. And look, I'm just happy as fuck he's on my TV. All is right with the world, it seems. I love that all of the CM Punk haters when he was in AEW, oh, he's not that great. Oh, he's kind of washed up anyway. Blah, blah, blah. All that went away as soon as he jumped back over to WWE. And people seem to be more on the Punk bandwagon than ever now, which is, it's phenomenal. It's amazing. It's good to see, especially with WWE. They're a fucking can't miss product right now. They're killing it. They're making so many stars. This stuff, he's got multiple storylines going on right now. It's just good shit. So I do think he is definitely kissing ass. I think he's playing nice. He's being PG Punk. But at the same time, I think a lot of it's coming from a real honest place. It seems like, at the very least, you know, it seems to be at this time his real honest opinions, his real honest thoughts. And look, this could lead to an AJ Lee return in that fucking mixed tag match at SummerSlam. That's what you got to do. Seth at Mania and then you do fucking the somehow drag it out to SummerSlam. Maybe not even SummerSlam. It could be before that. It could be Backlash. You want to do it at Backlash? You do the mixed tag. Becky and Seth versus AJ Lee and fucking Punk. But it should be at like a SummerSlam, right? But those are all my thoughts on the whole thing. What do you think? What are your thoughts on Punk's return so far? Where he's at with everything? Do you think he's being a little bit, playing it too nice? A little too much PG Punk? A little too kiss-assy for being in a company that he talked nothing but shit about for the last 10 years? Or do you think this is just, you know, this is just everybody's where they need to be right now? And, you know, things change, people change, things adjust, times change. Change, 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 my friends. Let me know your thoughts down in the comments below. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next. Woo! Everybody's second favorite little goth girl, Julia Hart. Of course, number one would be Wednesday, duh. But Julia Hart, possibly a strong number two, is everybody's favorite little goth girl. She appeared on the Busted Open radio show this week, and she was talking about where her character came from. She started into this business as the young cheerleader for the Varsity Blondes, and she was the cheerleading girl. And then she got sprayed in the face with the mist from Malachi, and it was all fucking said and done from after that. There was no turning back. But where does it all come from? Whose idea was it? Where does the inspiration come from? And did she have to get Malachi Black's approval before joining the House of Black? Check out this clip.
Your whole concept of a Julia Hart right now and in the House of Black. Can you talk more about how you created this whole persona, or did you have any help from the House of Black to recreate Julia Hart?
I will say I did have help, like, in ring wise and figuring out myself, but character wise, Malachi wanted me to present what my thought of his concept was and if I understood what he was doing. So when I asked to join House of Black, he said, come up with a promo and I'll see what you got. And I was like, okay. And I spent like 2 weeks working on this promo, and I made like a presentation, and I watched movies on characters I thought I would resemble, all of the things. And then when I finally showed him what I had, he was like, yep. And then I was kind of like, no more direction after that. He was just like, yep, you get it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think it's fun that she had to make a presentation to Malachi and kind of be like, kind of make her pitch to why she would fit with the House of Black and how she would present herself and that sort of thing. And that she was accepted instantly because, you know, I had heard a couple other interviews with her before. She said as much in this interview. She's a horror fan. She's a little goth girl. She's into that dark, creepy shit to begin with. Much like Alexa Bliss is, that's why she, you know, long before she did the Fiend stuff, she had Freddy Krueger and Chucky themed gear. You know, the people like their horror movies. I myself, I'm a huge horror nerd, so I can relate. And I appreciate a fellow wrestling nerd in the business. And she gets to present her spooky side. And not only that, but it's given her the ability to really grow over the last couple of years. I still don't think she's great. I honestly think she's a little overrated. That's not a negative. You know, everybody's like, she's almost talked about like she's the breakout star of the year or something. You know what I mean? Most improved of the year. She's coming along great. But I still think she's got a ways to go in the ring. But I think, you know, she's clicking. She's getting better, much better. She's growing. And I think she's definitely could be the future of women in professional wrestling. Look, you know, 5-10 years from now, Julia Hart could be a top star. She's already a top star. She's already a champion. But you get what I mean. She could be, like a staple of the women's division at that point. She's already on her way. But you get my point. I think there's all the potential in the world for Julia. I think she's cool as shit. I've been singing her praises since I first heard her do an interview. I think it was right around the first time she turned heel. And, you know, at that time when she turned heel, it was a weird fit. And there's a lot of people like, oh, why her in the House of Black? It's odd, but when I heard her doing it, I was like, oh, this chick's cool. There was something about just the way, you know what I mean? Similarly, her little sidekick right now, Sky Blue, did an interview on Talk Is Jericho this week, and she talked about turning heel and expressing her bad guy character. Check out this clip.
As we start to wind down here, talk a little bit about the whole thing with the House of Black and that angle, because that to me was kind of like the first kind of almost real angle and longer term storyline that you were that you've been involved in.
Yeah, I did not expect it like at all. I remember like me and Willow were talking about just like wanting to like just be a women's tag team and whatever, and you know try to make a tag division because there's not a lot of women's tags like here yet. So we were like, oh, we could do that, and then. They presented the idea and they were like, hey, you're going to get misted. And I was like, does that mean I get to be spooky? And they were like, yeah. Have you ever been a heel? I was like, no. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was always wanted to be a heel on the indies. And everybody's like, no, you're too much of like cute little baby face.
Right.
Come on guys, I can be mean. And then when they said, they're like, yeah, we're going to, you know, eventually. And I was like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I was so excited. And like, and there would be days that we were like, not no. Like, they were like, oh, maybe not. Maybe not. And I was like, please. Like,
yeah.
Please.
I really want to.
I want to challenge myself. I want to learn how to be a heel. I want to learn. Like I want, cause like I want to learn every aspect of wrestling. And I want to do as much of it as I can. Sure. So I was super excited, and like I feel like me and Julia could be a really cool tag team. I feel like
Sky Blue, another one listening to this podcast, cool as all hell. You know, when people do these long form interviews, their personalities shine through. Sky Blue seems like a cool ass chick. For example, I watched, we're all over the place. That's fine. We're just talking, especially women's wrestling, right? I know some, there are people that tune in for the women's wrestling segments that I do. The Britt Baker one did particularly well last week. So anyway, you know, for you guys, we'll have a little side convo here. Where the fuck was I even going with that? Where was I at?
A few moments later.
We'll go there. Sidebar contrast was Billy Starks on the AEW with RJ City this past weekend. And she was very annoying and very like she came off like a little brat and like a... I don't know. She rubbed me the wrong way. Didn't like her. But like a Sky Blue, Julia Hart, good people. People I'd like to hang out with. My kind of people. Not just because they're attractive, which goddamn Sky Blue especially. But anyway, just, you know, like they're cool people. They're my kind of people. The horror people, the vibe, the personality. Just seems like a fun bunch. So I'm glad that they're doing their thing. I'm glad that they're getting... their props. I'm glad that they're getting their TV time. And it's a storyline that seems to be working out for both of them. And it's even fun pairing them together because they're both growing and learning. Julia a little bit ahead of Sky Blue, but not by too far. But Julia can take Sky under her wing. And, you know, hopefully both of them can grow, especially if they're working closely with the House of Black, as Julia seems to be the case. You know, that she's able to reach out to them for input and stuff like that. It's all a win-win-win, in my opinion. But what are your thoughts on these two here women, Sky Blue and or Julia Hart, down in the comments below? Do you like their characters? Do you like where the creative is going for them? Do you like them as people? Do you like their potential in the women's division? Do you think they will be top stars? Julia kind of already there, but do you think like in the long term, you think she'll end up holding down that spot? What about Sky Blue? Who else do you like? Are you here for the women? You know, as I said, you know, like the Britt Baker video last week, I was a little bit surprised at how that one did. Are you one of the women viewers that were here to check out some more women's content? I don't mind talking about it. I like the women's stuff, so we'll talk about it from time to time when it makes news. This one was for you guys, if you're here for that specifically, but also because I love Sky Blue and Julia Hart. But peace, love, and pizza. I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next. Bro, Matt Riddle was on the Kurt Angle Show. He sat down, had a good little interview with Kurt Angle, all about what he's got going on nowadays. He's going to be going over to work with New Japan, and he's working with MLW. So two great hookups for Matt Riddle, so he ain't going anywhere anytime soon. And he's out to tear up the indies. He wants to get rid of the goofiness. He's still going to keep the bro, but he wants to get rid of the goofiness, and he wants to go out there and really show people that he can kick some fucking ass. And we all know that he can. So he's going to go out there, bring the indie work rate style along with the fun bro stuff. And I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see where he goes, where his trajectory takes him, if you will. But what got him here? Why is he out on the indies to begin with? Well, he got shit canned by the WWE. And we all kind of saw it coming. There were definitely warning signs. And Kurt Angle asked the original bro, Matt Riddle himself, why he thinks he was released from the WWE, and Riddle didn't hold back. He's self-aware. He knows what's up. Check out this clip.
All right, Matt, do you think the WWE-UFC merger into TKO sped up your exit from the WWE?
I think that definitely didn't help things. I know me and Dana White don't have the greatest relationship, and I know he's definitely a big part of that. And it definitely played a part. Also, I know they were making budget cuts regardless, and I was getting paid quite a pretty penny. You know, when gotcha. I don't know if it was right before RK-Bro or right after they, you know, the Laurinaitis pulled me into the office, and I thought I was in trouble. I was like, oh, you know, I didn't get my vaccine yet. And I was like, oh man, like, I don't know. You know, and I went in there like, hey, we wanted to give you a raise. And they gave me a substantial raise, and it increased, you know, every year. And this year I was going to get paid $1 million a year. I was at 750. Wow. And I mean, last year I cleared my bucket. I did extremely well. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big contributing factor. I was going to get paid $1 million starting next year. But I also think, you know, the merger didn't help. And then also my behavior didn't help either, you know. And I ruffled some feathers, you know, with HR in the last couple months I was there. I asked a couple questions and this, that, plus other things. So I think there was multiple reasons why they got rid of me. But it is what it is. You know, one door shuts, another one opens. And you just learn from your mistakes and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, and you said it, you learn from your mistakes and move on. So I'm sure there's obviously maybe some regrets, probably would have done some things a little differently. I'm guessing.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things, you know, I probably would have done a little differently. I probably wouldn't have talked a lot of shit that I talked, you know, that helped a lot, you know, but you know, I'll be honest, like, you know, I working on the road, traveling that much, and then, bad decisions, and that's just what happens. It's life, you know.
Learning and, lesson, like you said.
Have bad people around, you know, and unfortunately, when you're on the road, sometimes it's out of control, you know. So
yeah,
that's it. But I have no regrets, you know. You know, you only live once, and you learn from your mistakes, like I said. And yeah,
I think Matt Riddle is one of those people who tends to rub people the wrong way instantly. He said it here in this interview, too. When he first met Randy, him and Randy are still good friends to this day. But when he first met Randy, he said Randy hated his guts. You know, he said he had that beef with Goldberg. He said they squashed it after they hung out on a plane ride. They had to sit next to each other, and they talked it out. You know, Dana White's very outspoken, was outspoken about how much he dislikes Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle rubs people the wrong way. He's got a way about him. He's aloof. He's very bro. He seems very chill, but he's also very cocky, very arrogant. It's that California style. I believe that's where he's from. I actually don't even know. But if I had to guess, he's very much got that Southern Cali fucking surfer vibe, the bro scene. He's very chill, but he's very pompous, very full of himself, as he should be. He's talented as all fuck. He's outspoken. He's never afraid to bite his tongue. That's one of his problems, he said. You know, maybe I just shouldn't have said things as much as I did. But look, we're in a profession. This is a sport, this great sport of ours, professional wrestling, where these are characters. These are personalities. Like, nobody was offended when Bruiser Brody was a fucking outspoken individual in his day, right? If he had an opinion about something backstage, he'd punch you in the face over it to get his point across. These are characters. These are larger-than-life people. You don't tell these people what to do. You can't contain these people. That's why they're superstars, you know, the superstars. We all hate that term, but what makes a superstar is a larger-than-life personality. Enigmatic, you know, charismatic, the whole fucking just all the Maddocks, you know, add them all together. That's what makes a superstar. Matt Riddle leaks charisma. He is such a star. He offends everybody because he's full of him. He's got that swagger and confidence from day one. Everybody thinks he's just this cocky bro, smartass. But, you know, he's also chill. He's down to earth. He just doesn't give a shit. He doesn't bite his tongue. And sure, he's got his, everybody's got his problems. I'm not going to dig into his personal life with his, you know, the women and all that shit that's may or may not have happened. You know, if you're listening to the full episode or any of my other clips, you'll know that we're not doing that around here. Internet rumor and innuendo. We'll stay out of that, but I think Matt Riddle has all the potential in the world. You know, Dolph Ziggler is another one who's out there on the free market now. Mustafa Ali. All these guys are kind of breaking into the scene now, and it's amazing. It's fucking amazing to see these guys coming out here doing their thing and being these free agents out on the market. And that's the same thing with Matt Riddle. He's out on the scene, and he's, like I said, he's vowed to come out here and show a different side of Riddle. He's going to keep the bro charisma, the character, the high-on surfer dude, but he's also going to kick your fucking ass. You know, and talking to Kurt Angle is a great – he's a great person to pick the brain of, too, by the way. Not just the sports background – not, you know, the shoot ability to kick everybody's fucking ass for real, you know, the shoot athleticism, the shoot fighting ability, but also the ability to play the goofy character in the serious wrestling machine at the same time, either or on a flip of a dime. You know, it was a great, and Kurt said it here, you know, I've been there, done that, you know, I know exactly what you mean. I would, if I was Riddle, I would definitely keep Kurt around as a top advisor to me. You know, just, hey, Kurt, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Because Kurt made that transition seamlessly. He was a goof when he got in, but he could back it up because he was an Olympian, right? And then he just went full comedian, and he was still obviously could back it up in the ring. But when he switched to that remember ECW launched, and he was one of the picks, the drafts to ECW, and he was the wrestling machine, and he just beat the fuck out of people. He had that match with Randy Orton at One Night Stand, and just beat the snot out of Orton in that match. You know, they had a hell of a match there. And I think, you know, Riddle has the potential to just be a beast out there and have some fucking clinics. And with guys like him and Nick Nemeth out there now, just out on the indie scene, doing the New Japans, doing the MLWs, doing the TNAs. My God, wrestling, let me tell you something, brother. 2024 wrestling will never be hotter. It's going to be a great fucking year for wrestling. All those huge stars out on the indies, it's going to be great, bro. That's it, y'all. That's all I got for you this week. A little bit shorter. Not a lot of news to get into, you know. The Tony Khan thing, everybody and their moms kind of already talked about it, but it's worth giving my two cents anyway to stay relevant and in the conversation. But beyond that, you know, I honestly don't give a shit. Tony making an ass of himself online. It is what it is. He always does. There's no news here. People making fun of him. No news there. But it's fun getting into these things and listening to these people bicker back and forth. I love getting involved with that. I do want to give that special thanks once again to Nick Hausman for actually responding to my email and contributing. That was really, really dope. Not that he's listening here, but for you guys that are listening here, you know, give him a little bit of respect, at least in that case. But I'm kind of proud of myself on that story, too, because it's kind of gone nowhere since. And I kind of, you know, pointed out last week why it went nowhere, because it's baseless and it's got nothing there. Not that nothing will ever come out. I still think there's probably something under the surface. There's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. But at the same time, there's nothing, you know, no fire has been seen yet. And the smoke's pretty much been fizzled out. But that was fun to address. Big announcement next week, episode 100. Is if I do it next week, I don't know. Might take a break. It depends where the news goes. If it's another boring week like this, I'm not going to. I mean, look, man, some of this, like, you know, it's hard to talk about shit sometimes that's kind of not really point. You know, there's no point to it. You know what I mean? Just some pointless Twitter beef. Who cares? Who cares? I don't care about Tony Khan's Twitter beef. So, but you got to participate in that as a pundit in the wrestling. Like, you can't just ignore that kind of shit. So, but there are other things I'd rather be talking about. Slow news week is what it is. A lot of the wrestlers that are on their 90-day non-competes are now hitting the scene. That's breaking a lot of news, but we don't talk about the wrestling stuff. All the news in wrestling is actually in the ring this week for a change, with Nick Nemeth and Mustafa Ali and AJ Francis out there, and what's her name? Dana Brooke. Ugh. I like her name, though. Is it Ash by Elegance or some shit like that? That's kind of a fun name. But they're all out on the market now. Shit's popping. Shit's about to go crazy. Riddle's out there. It's going to be a fun time. It's going to be a fun year with wrestling. It's going to be a popping year. TNA, I did a prediction, a New Year's prediction. One of my predictions was TNA was going to have a breakout year, one of their best years, if not their best year, since, like, they were head-to-head with Monday Night Raw, essentially. And so far, so good with Hard to Kill. Had huge, great reviews. I haven't caught it yet, but damn, you know, they're making their mark, which is exactly what I thought. There's a void for a third wrestling company now that Ring of Honor's kind of been scooped up by AEW, and it's kind of basically also AEW or AEW Lite or like AEW's junior division or their NXT, if you will. There's room for that strong third brand to break in, and TNA is making a huge play. They're making a push. They're spending money. The rebrand, I think, was genius because it refreshes everything, clean slate. People always called it TNA anyway. Impact kind of got boring and stale, where TNA had a bit of a stigma, a TNA stink, if you will. Impact kind of grew to be the little indie that tries but will never quite get there. But it just feels like with this rebranding of TNA, it sort of like reestablishes themselves as they were like number two at the time, where there was no number two. They were distant number two, but they were number two. And that, with like the money that they're spending and like the matches, the quality of product that they're putting on, they seem to be recommitting themselves to be in that conversation again. Now, they're not going to be a number two over AEW, but they can certainly be a very strong number three and compete with New Japan for that and kind of slide into that spot that Ring of Honor left vacant. Look, GCW doesn't have the budget to slide in and do that. MLW, try as they may, have not been able to reach that point where they can slide in and take that spot. Freddie Prinze Jr. hasn't started his promotion yet. So OVW, they just picked up Mickey James. I would expect to see more out of OVW, especially because looks like they're going to get renewed for a season two of Wrestler, the Wrestler show on Netflix. So they're going to be in the game as a strong indie by the end of 2024. I think a lot more people are going to be talking about OVW. But TNA's got that spot, man. TNA is going to bring the fire, and they're going to be a contender this year, no doubt about it. But that's pretty much all I got. The announcement will take place next week. We will make an announcement about this show, and it will change the course of this show forever. I'm not retiring. But this is the biggest announcement since we switched to video. And after next week, everything, or next episode, the 100th episode, everything changes. Dun, dun, dun. But one thing that will never change is this is where we're going to be talking all the trash about all the podcasts, all the YouTube videos, all the news that breaks outside the ring. We're going to continue to bring the fire as we always do. I'm also going to be looking to be doing a lot of interviews. I do think it's about time. I keep, I got the, have you ever heard of like imposter syndrome? Where like, you feel like you're, you feel like you're a phony in the real business, right? Like, oh, I'm not really in the mix with all these guys. I'm just kind of, I'm pretending to be almost, you know what I mean? Like of all the work I do and all the subscribers that I'm, that continue to grow and the views are growing and like I'm getting in the game here, still low level by all measurements, but like, you know, compared to where I was last year, right? So imagine where I'll be in 2 years, 5 years, whatever. But I feel like I'm still not anywhere near the point where I should be interviewing people. But like, then you look at that like Jeff Snyder dude that did that interview with FTR. And granted, I don't know where he comes from, his media, you know, who he represents, whatever. That interview's on his YouTube channel, which is significantly smaller than mine, with significantly less views, and the interview wasn't as good. And I've seen a lot of interviews lately where there's been some just shitty interviews. People ask dumb questions, and I think I got this. So I'm going to probably start making some moves to start interviewing some lower level people, presenting those on this show. Maybe some higher level people. Like if this guy can get FTR, maybe I can get old Dax, all hair, bald hair, FTR hair and FTR bald. Let's get him on. Let's do it. And, I talked about wanting to possibly speak with Patrick Clark. I did have somebody try to advise me against maybe going that route just because of, he does have some pretty serious allegations against him out there. I don't want to come off as being his buddy guy or anything. But at the same time, look, man, you know, everybody deserves a voice. You know, he deserves to get his side of the story out there at the very least. Doesn't mean I got to endorse it, but I can at least give him the microphone and hear what he has to say, right? So it's a thought. It's something I'm toying around with. He might be one of the first people I reach out to, but I'm going to start playing with that. If I don't do it this year, definitely by 2025, but I would expect to see that more towards the end of the year or more towards sometime this year, as well as me going live. And who knows? I may even be toying with the idea of doing the 100th episode live, which is also why I said might not be next week, because I might need an extra week to prepare for that. But I have toyed with the idea of live streaming that 100th episode just for fun. So who knows, man? Who knows where the future leads? But I, just like the sun, maybe not just like the sun, because the sun's here every day and I'm here a couple days at least, you know, here and there. But, I will continue to be here, continue to grow this channel, continue to grow the pod, continue to grow the product. And that's what we're doing, man. We're grinding. And the Pro Wrestling Podcast will continue no matter what. So don't feel like I'm going away or I'm going to die or anything like that. I'm not hanging it up like Matt Pat. Hear about that shit? Matt Pat, food theory, game theory, movie theory, style theory. He's gone. He's leaving. I ain't doing that, but anyway, fuck, I'm rambling now. That's it. We'll leave it there. Like, follow, subscribe, all that shit. Peace, love, and pizza. I am your boy, Seth Grimes, and this has been the Pro Wrestling Podcast.